The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM Channel 189. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin on this Labor Day, 2026.
Hey-o.
Yeah, no more white pants for you.
No, that's right.
Set. It's over today.
That one took me a second. Yeah, that's, you're right. Rule. I had to put those in the back of the closet as usual.
Those,
you know,
white slacks that you wear every day.
Yeah,
put them in the drawer.
Well, you know my flashy white jacket I like to wear around town.
Yeah,
white leather jacket. That's what Kelly's known for.
You don't do it after Labor Day. Darnell's already mad at me because usually what happens before the show, just a little inside baseball here. I come in, I say nothing, I go to the back, I throw him a beautiful Doug Williams spiral, with the exception of one day. Right to Darnell. I throw him a Fiji water. Today,
right.
I forgot to do it. Now, in my ear, he's like, you mad at me? So already, we're off to a flying start.
Oh, great. The director's mad at Gil. Off to a flying start.
Yeah. Greg Peterson on the show today.
Management knows there's water bottles being thrown over very expensive equipment.
That's right. haven't missed yet. Nothing's happened yet. Wes Reynolds will join us as well. Oh, and this is great. I mentioned this on Thursday or Friday. Can't remember. Justin Emery, who is the producer of Money Moves, which is not directly after us. Prop Points is directly after us. But Money Moves with Stormy Bonatoni and Jonathan Von Tobel follows Prop Points with John Hansen. And Justin Emery is their producer, Stormy and JVT's. And he did this amazing piece at VSiN.com about MLB strikeout props. Not just your garden variety. Hey, this starting pitcher will have over under its pre-flop number of strikeouts in a given game. Although that's how his journey started. And we'll have Justin here, I believe, in studio, yes?
Yeah, he's going to be in studio. Yep.
And we're going to have Justin talk his way through how it evolved from there to the strikeout leader of the day in Major League Baseball. So from individual strikeout over-under props to who's going to have the most strikeouts in Major League Baseball in a day, how he evolved, how he has done, and let me just spoiler alert on the how he has done, he continues to crush it.
I was going to say, I think I talked to him on Thursday about coming on here, and I think he's hit
two
days in the last four on these. I mean, and talking double digit, these are like 16 to 1, 10 to 1.
And again, it's not about having Justin on to brag, oh, look how great I am. It's about the process that he went through to get there, I think is so great.
Yes, I agree, because how many times do you run into bettors? Maybe we don't talk to these types of bettors on the show so often, Gil, but I want to bet this market because this is something I know well. And then you just bang your head against the wall trying to beat it every day. And one of two things happens. Either you pivot and you figure out a different angle, a different edge to attack that with, which I think Justin has, or you kind of give up on it and move on, right? So I think it's a great story, I think, as evolving as a better, especially at specific markets.
And on Labor Day, it's appropriate because he put in the time.
That's right.
He really did. Speaking of banging your head against the wall, that's me in the U.S. Open. I'm just getting destroyed in this tournament.
Yeah, Friday was good, man. Wasn't Friday good for you?
Yeah, I mean, the winning days are there, but there's like a trickle when I win.
Yeah.
When I lose, it's not fun. And yesterday was just the typical example. You know what? Get back to it. I said it last. There's no science behind this. I just know that if you bet long enough, you know this to be true. What's the old Bill Maher thing? I don't know it to be a fact, but I know it's true. When you have a day where three matches, right, that you were supposed to win somehow conspire against you and you lose, which just happened the first day of the U.S. Open, if you recall that, three like horrific losses were right on the doorstep of winning. Whenever that happens in sports betting, the cavalcade of losses ensues. Same opposite, right? If you win something you're not supposed to win, then it's just this stretch of greatness. Well, that's been my U.S. Open. And yesterday was just a typical example. Daniil Medvedev looked terrible against Tiafoe.
Yeah.
I know the broadcast tried to make it out to be Tiafoe. Medvedev just hitting the ball into the net. Anna Kalinskaya, as beautiful as she is, boy, can she mentally just tank a match if things don't go her way. So it's just been awful. Our three-quarter plays are all donezo now. Krejcikova was the first to go. And Amanda Anisimova with another just like head scratching performance a couple days ago. She lost. She got bounced. And Medvedev yesterday is out. So all the quarter plays are donezo. Our two outrights are there. Iga to win. Women's. By the way, we're going to get Iga here during the show in about 90 minutes against Zheng Xinwen. who came back from 5-1 down in the third set against Maddie Keys to win. So Świątek trying to get to the quarters. She's still got four to win to get our 7-1 home. We shall see. Big challenge today. And Carlitos, I mean, the one thing I will say is, I think everybody who ended up betting Carlos the morning we had, you know, the Sinner withdrawal, pretty happy with having Carlitos. He's got Ben Shelton next, though. Big test for him. He's at plus 175. So the end of the tournament, the final word has not been written. We obviously have a couple outrights, and there's more tennis to be played. But so far, so bad. Let's just be honest. It has not been good. I have three plays today. Play at your own risk. This guy's been winning for us. He's been the one bright spot. Arthur Xea, plus 140 versus Bodik van de Zandschulp is the one dog play today. And then a couple favorites, which I'm playing on the spread line, which is what I did with both Kostyuk and Medvedev yesterday. So we didn't lose the whole juice on the money line. Tien minus three versus Karen Khachanov. These are all men's plays today. And Alexander Blocks minus three versus Francisco Cerúndolo. Blocks has been amazing. Great hard court numbers. And Cerúndolo, a clay court converted to hard court. So those are the three plays. Xea on the money line, GEA on the money line, plus 140. Tien minus three, Blocks minus three. That's your tennis for today as we try to reverse course in the U.S. Open.
I feel like Zach's been betting a bunch of Blocks. That's what we got. That's Blocks. What we're going. Nah, man. Really wish it was Block X. That would have been cool.
Block X, like Latinx.
Yeah, this is Block X. 10.
What'd you say about Zach?
No, I feel like he's been betting a lot of him here recently. So
good see for
if
him.
He's up on him as well. And yeah, what was it? Xia? Xia?
I've been pronouncing it Gaia.
Xia?
I think it's Xia.
Okay.
Quite frankly, it was Jay. Cool. Yeah, I'm not really sure. But he's been clutch. But he's got a little wear on his tire, so we'll see. This is the back half of the round of 16. The quarterfinals begins tomorrow.
Does BV to Z finally go down, you know?
I'm betting on it, but he's been great. BV to Z, who was ready to retire, and now he's playing great tennis.
Man, again. I feel like that's been the case with a couple people here that I've seen.
Emma Navarro?
Been, yes.
Yesterday, she was so clutch. When she had to be, she was.
Well, and then Zhang too, right? Didn't she have hadn't she had a rough season?
Just mentioned, yeah. She had, and then she was down 5-1. Yeah, she had a rough. She had to qualify. She was in the
right. Quality. Yeah, wow. Yeah. And she looks unstoppable right now.
Yeah, still on the ladies' side, it's Sabalenka plus 230, Coco plus 425, Iga at 5-1. But all the ladies' side is not nearly as carnagey as the men's side. Men's side got decimated.
Yeah, Alcaraz down to minus 165 now. But yeah, women's still relatively wide open, right?
Relatively wide open.
So eight names, 18 to one or shorter.
Yeah. Anything can happen there. Men's side, it's still, I mean, Sasha Zverev, Ben Shelton, still alive. Tiafoe, some people think the crowd will take Foe to the finish line. We shall see on that. College football, though, of course, took the headlines this week. It's our last Monday before the NFL season. By the way, after the show today, the Megapod.
Oh, seriously?
Week one Megapod after the show today.
Woo!
Steve Fezzik is our leadoff guest. As per usual, looking forward to that.
That's been a regular week one thing here recently?
Yeah, it used to be Brady Cannon.
Okay.
And then it ceded to Steve Fezzik at some point. So Fezzik is the guest.
We got NFL football in 2 days, man.
Todd Wishnev, Will Hill, and I, the 16th season of the Megapod. Looking forward to that. But this is the last Monday before that. College football, of course, took center stage this weekend. Producer number 5 and 8, Jeff Parles, the Grover Cleveland producers, his phrase used to be college football, Gilly. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically his way of saying, you know, there's just some unique quirks to this sport that you're just going to have to live with. And a few of those in just glorious form this weekend. One, the notion of the coaches knowing the spread, which used to be a little quaint thing, right? Used to be like, hey, Bill Snyder, Kansas State, he knows the spread. Look at that. Now it's everybody kind of knows it, and they just play this, the end of games. As bettors, it's actually a thing, right? We have to know how these coaches are going to play ends of games in college football. We saw a little more benign version of it last night. Marcus Freeman, right? Notre Dame up 21 against Wisconsin, and, you know, they're still matriculating the ball down the field. They're throwing the ball, and C.J. Cardinal and James for 28 with under 2 minutes left, and Notre Dame wins by 28. That was a lesser version of what happened from some other games. Ryan Day, as James Fessler reminds us, with Ohio State, up 48-3 with six left. 6 minutes left at their own 37. They call three runs and five pass plays for a touchdown at the 2 minute mark to cover the minus 50 and a half to hit for boosters. And then Sonny Cumbie of Louisiana Tech. This is the worst, Kelly. Do you see this? Louisiana Tech.
No, I did not.
Up 77-3. So the spread is not in doubt, right? It's 44.5 is the spread.
I'm going to guess the total's not in doubt either.
They're playing Northwestern State. They're up 77-3. With 8 minutes left in the game, they decide to kick a 49-yard field goal. So you just have to, that didn't affect the spread. But I'm just saying, these guys are ridiculous the way they play the ends of games. Long gone are the days of class.
Yeah, you just don't know, man.
Now it's the era of Bill Belichick. Oh, you hate it so much. Why don't you stop us? Shut up.
Well, I feel like that one's the excuse is like, well, week one, we got to see what the kicker looks like. That's the excuse there.
This, of course, was.
Wait, hold on. I want to go back to something you said, though. The for the boosters. I feel like the past few years, that's the only like reason I've heard.
It's always the boosters.
But like I kind of agree with it. I kind of think it's okay. Like, I don't really have a problem with it.
This was, of course, made clear years and years ago when Todd Wishnev used to do Wishnev Wednesdays with me on a numbers game. Yeah. And I think he was fading Cincinnati. And Luke Fickell at the time was the coach of Cincinnati. And it was 31-6 Bearcats with less than 30 seconds left. And I think the spread was still in doubt. And Fickell up 31-6 is running the hurry up to score. And it's just like, okay, all these guys are just schmucks.
Yeah,
but you got to know this.
Keep it in mind. You got to keep it in mind.
Yep. That was like 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the big story is the refereeing. We'll talk about that next.
Oh.
And look at some teams per conference to make the college football playoff next on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget about the sharp plays, unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting info, and alerts directly from the pros. Sharpplays.com. Scan the QR code for more. I was very excited when I just read that.
You were. Check it out.
2 days away from the National Football League.
It's crazy.
So pumped.
It's crazy.
This is finally here. Let's play already. Come on.
I know we're about to get to it, too, but I love the text I have about week one college football because there's like, hey, if you want to catch the absolute height of me being locked into college football,
it is right now.
It is right now. Right. And it's the most bets I'm going to have like all year. I'm firing left and right like I'm a college football genius on Saturday. And be like, you know me, Gil. Catch me in the college football playoffs now. That'll be the next time where I'm firing away.
That's kind of our thing. I know we're all over the place here on this Labor Day, but let's update the September wins in Major League Baseball real quick. Oh, by the way, you know what I'm looking forward to today on the show, which I didn't tease at the top? A deep dive. You don't even know how deep dive I did here.
Boom, boom, boom.
Into MLB Manager of the Year.
Oh, my God. I love this. You know, I've got someone in the race. I'm glad you did a deep dive
because I
just really need Gil's opinion. Hopefully I'm close here.
Once again, our new producer, Drew Cornbread Maxwell, likes baseball more than he likes football. So let's give the man what he wants.
That's right, man.
MLB most September wins. This is obviously we're only 5-6 games into the month. But remember, it's the short month, right? The most any team plays is 25 games. We only have 3 weeks left of Major League regular season baseball, meaning the balance of September, in quotes, for us. And right now, there are, 8 teams that have 4 wins. It is just a logjam of 4 wins. The Reds actually would win your tiebreaker right now at Circa. They're 4-1. Then you have our Blue Jays at 4-2, the Athletics and Cardinals also at 4-2, our Red Sox at 4-2, the Pirates, well, what is that? That should be the Phillies, I think. Is there those? The Pirates at 4-2. Is the Pirates at 4-2? I don't know why we have 4-1 there. Dodgers 4-2, Guardians 4-3. So there you go. So it's those 8 teams with 4. There's a bunch at 3 also. We haven't decided anything at this point. Nobody has separated from the pack. This could very well go down to the wire. We have not had a month go down to the wire yet this year, really, except for March, April was kind of down to the wire. But everybody else seems to have clinched with days to spare. But this one should be different. But our Blue Jays and Red Sox tied with 4 wins in that scrum of 8 teams. So good start so far.
Man, I don't know how many shops yeah, we know the regular ones that have this up. I don't know if like Kalshi and some prediction markets. Yes, no, yes, no. A no price on the Dodgers might be interesting. This short a month, that many teams bunched up and they're plus 175.
Yeah, keep in mind, and the Blue Jays are still 10 to 1. I know I got them at plus, what was it, 22, 23, 25? Some people got them at 28 to 1. I got the Blue Jays at plus 23, 25. Remember, one of the big parts of the handicap of the Blue Jays was the fact that you got five starts out of Dylan Cease. We've already gotten one. That was a win. Tonight is start number two. So in a short month of 24 games in the Blue Jays case, we get five Dylan Cease starts because his first one was September 2nd. So it just times out well. Tonight is start number two for the Blue Jays in Sacktown, Bay Area, and back down.
Okay, because
so I still think the Blue Jays are a great bet at 10 to 1. I really do.
Because of that, would you say, like, if I said you could only get rid of your bet, or if someone else come in, they want to tail you on one of the two teams that you bet, where would you go right now?
I'd still go Jays. I mean, I'd still go Jays over Red Sox.
You would? Okay.
I think so because of the Cease factor.
Because of the Cease factor.
Yeah. Crochet will come back with to the Red Sox, but as a relief pitcher here in the back half of the month, maybe the final week even. I don't know. But that's the story with the Red Sox.
Yeah, Sox 9-1 at DraftKings and Blue Jays 10-1 currently.
And remember, the Dodgers were my third. They're also in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dodgers beating the Nats, come from behind win last night. Okay, so there's that in baseball. Back to college football for a second. That's just because this is really, obviously, I was talking about the coaches knowing the spread because we come from a betting perspective. But obviously, the biggest deal was with the officiating and how, you know, I don't know if you saw the Notre Dame game where Notre Dame recovered a kickoff that was muffed.
Mm-hmm.
But the dude, you know, it looked like in live action that he recovered it easily in bounds, but then replay showed that he bobbled it and then only really corralled the ball when half of his body was out of bounds. And yet somehow replay was like, nah, he's good. It's Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Let's give him the ball. This is the thing with this. I am an anti-fixed crowd guy. I hate the people out there like, oh, these games are rigged, these games are fixed. Why does it always seem to benefit the blue bloods in college football?
I know.
It always just feels that way. Anyway, Notre Dame recovers the ball. They score a touchdown. They go up 10-3.
And also, like, I think it's just like, just so people know where Gil and I are usually coming from. Like, yeah, it's usually like you and I are usually rooting for the refs to get this stuff right so we don't have to sit here and talk about this stuff. Did not hear from that crowd that everything's fixed. Everything's
that, of course, on the heels of the biggest story of the weekend, which is Michigan and Western Michigan, which, again, Michigan scores on the very first drive of the game. You're like, oh, okay, they're just going to roll them.
Yeah.
They never score again until 60 minutes and 1 second had elapsed. And, of course, you know what I'm talking about, which is it's 12-7. By the way, we can go back and talk about should Western Michigan have kicked the field goal there. That's a whole nother story. I'll let other people do that. But it's 12-7 Western Michigan. And we all saw what happens. It's a, you know, Michigan matriculates to the 47-yard line. And Bryce Underwood throws a Hail Mary. And by the clock that we as viewers see, clearly time had expired. The ball's in the back of the end zone. Game over. In fact, if you had your Yahoo play-by-play, yeah, or if you're following certain people on Twitter who already had their pre-written tweets ready to go, Michigan upset by Western Michigan, right? The play-by-play said it final, 12-7 Western Michigan. In fact, you were saying you found out Michigan won much later.
It was probably 2 hours later. I'm watching.
Yes.
That. I'm like, all right. I mean, everybody treats it like this, right? Last second Hail Mary, throw it up. My controller's already in my hand to change the channel.
Me
right?
too.
Let me see where this goes. All right, it's up. What a terrible throw out of the back of the end zone. No shot. Boom, click, change the channel.
That's exactly right.
And then I'm going to let you finish the story. But yeah, hours later, I'm seeing stuff pop up on my phone.
Popped up on
my
phone.
But I'm just ignoring it, thinking it's all wild upset in college football.
Popped up on my phone, Michigan and won. And the explanation, we all know what happened. They gave him a second. Bryce Underwood, Hail Mary again, J.J. Buchanan, touchdown Michigan, and they stave off the potential upset from Western Michigan. If you had Western Michigan on the money line, Mike, condolences to you.
Yeah.
You should just wrap it up. And the Big Ten's explanation, and I'll just paraphrase this, and they showed a video, right, sometime after. It was like, you know, master control of the Big Ten, where they have a clock superimposed on the replay from the back of the end zone. Western Michigan player from an out of bounds position touches the ball, and their clock that they're watching at, you know, back at the Big Ten headquarters replay center still shows 1 second left on the clock or ticks, whatever. The point is, I'm not going to get in. By the way, the Mac couldn't have handled this better, right? Both Western Michigan coach and the Mac commissioner couldn't have handled it more gracefully, which, by the way, I'm not even sure was the correct way to handle it. You know, maybe you should have thrown a tantrum. But either way, the only thing I want to say about this is I'm not going to get into whether we're supposed to believe, right? We are made to believe as fans that what the Big Ten was doing back there, yes, this was in fact the clock when this happened. And you're just supposed to have to, you know, you have to go with what they're saying. We just as fans in any sport cannot have this. In the NFL, when there's a last play of the game, the NFL officials are instructed to do it by the clock that is shown on the TV screen. This is not the case in college football, and specifically in the Big Ten. And we can't have that as fans. We can't be watching a sport, and what we are able to see clockwise is not what in fact the official clock is in these final game situations. You just can't have this as an entertainment vehicle. There's no way. This is the biggest screw job ever since Russia beat the U.S. in the Olympics in basketball in 1972 when they were given not one, not two, but three chances to score the game-winning bucket. I wasn't aware of it because I was too young, but that's the last time in sports there's ever been this big of an egregious problem. And even if you, again, it's egregious because that's the clock we were shown. We have to at least agree on that. They can't go by something we can't see. And that's, it's never going to sit well with people, even if it was kosher, by the way, behind the scenes, even if it was. How many teams will make the college football playoff, by the way? You get week zero and week one of NFL to watch. I kind of like the chalk in all of these. ACC under, it's Miami and nobody else.
Oh, God, who else has looked good? Yeah.
Well, your Seminoles tonight.
Chance tonight. Catching three at home against SMU and everybody and their mother on SMU.
Yeah.
Everybody and their mother was on Louisville though last night. That worked out.
Big 12. I mean, it's Texas Tech. So the under is, I think, the appropriate chalk. I don't know who else is getting in there. Big 10. Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon. I guess this is where we could quibble, right? Because some people think the Penn States of the world can get in there. The SEC, the over minus 155, absolutely, right? Because yeah. It's Georgia, Texas, and then there's LSU, there's A&M, there's Bama, there's Oklahoma, there's Ole Miss.
SEC look good this weekend. Shocker, I know.
I lean chalk in all these. Greg Peterson, baseball, next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Labor Day, everybody. You say Happy Labor Day? I do think you do.
Yeah.
Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets beating the book. Patrick Kelly, Happy Labor Day, gentlemen. Block X, the tennis player with the video game name. RAE, yes, indeed. RAE Network. Not sure if Marcus Freeman was aware of the spread, although he could have been. I think his late score had more to do with being left out last year and wanting to have beatdowns on the resume in case Notre Dame's on the bubble again. Never know, though. That's a great point. Yeah, his was not the most egregious of the bunch. Steve the Proxy, who do you have as the worst team in the NFL? Browns, Dolphins, Cardinals, or Jets? I hope you say Jets. Have a great week, guys. I'll probably see you this week and say hello. Please do, Steve the Proxy. I'm going to say Dolphins.
Miami Dolphins? I don't even think it's all that close.
Miami Dolphins.
I think the Cardinals could be chasing them for worst record, but it's because of the division that they play in.
Stringfellow Hawk had Notre Dame minus 18.5 and under 48.5. Didn't need that last touchdown. Cashed a couple of Will Hill third quarter unders, though. Football. That's right. Football. Michael Burns. I bet more college than NFL. Don't get to watch the NFL. Work nights, sleep Sunday days. Oh, he sleeps on Sundays. Wow. Three Jacques, age 3131. Gil calls seemingly always go in the blue blood's favor because that's why. Happy day of laboring, fellas. You too. This is from Chance Copperpot. I had Western Michigan plus 1.5 and 11-1 money line all bet live. I still thought about not being up 12 units when I woke up the next day, but I was able to move on with my life. Welcome back, funny shaped ball sport. Why do we bet this again? Oh, I don't know. Oh, Vegas, man. Vice, This is the best comment of the college football weekend. Quote, all of this Michigan controversy would be solved if football adopted soccer's timekeeping method, where the game ends whenever the referee arbitrarily decides it's over. Unquote. That's absolutely right. Then we wouldn't, we'd be like, sure.
That's right. We watched all summer of this. Yeah. Why do we care so much? We didn't care.
Jonathan Call, as a Western Michigan alum, I have to admit that I was shocked that the NCAA adopted the World Cup clock rules and just let the officials decide when the game is officially over. And daily sports picks. Tonight's SMU-FSU game should give that recap plenty to work with. Curious which early angles hold up. And Michael Montesano, the thing that was so blasphemous about after the fact was that the Big Ten basically just snubbed everyone that questioned their secret clock that no one knew about. They were like, well, this is what it is, so deal with it. Mike, that's my point. Like, okay, I guess you have a secret clock and we're supposed to just believe you. Sure. Sure. Okay. You can't have this. It has to be the clock we see. Kind of, I was about to say something.
You need to go to less than full seconds too, right? Like this is, there's like rounding involved in what we put on the television or not.
Oh, God.
Like I was saying it during, what was it, last break? The NBA, I can rarely sit up here and says get something right compared to other sports, but the NBA, end of game, it also helps, yes, that the court is much smaller than how big the football field is and that you have cameras all the way around it, but still, like, it is tens of seconds, right? It is, you see exactly where that ball hits up off a player and out of bounds.
On the other hand, some people miss the quaintness of old school when no one cared about such things. Tony Farmer sent a video about so Tom Brady's first Super Bowl that he won.
Yeah.
Do you see this?
No, I didn't. But we all like to say things like that unless you're a Western Michigan like backer alum fan, right?
No. I'm not subscribing to it. I'm just saying some people, right? And when Adam Vinatieri kicked the winning field goal against the Rams, this is the very first Tom Brady Super Bowl when the Rams were 14-point favorites and Vinatieri kicks the winning field goal for the Patriots. There were 7 seconds left on the clock when they snapped the ball and they just let that clock go down to zero. And no one said a word at the time.
The walk-off field goals, we always like to let that clock bleed. Yeah.
Oh, man. That was a long time ago, quarter century ago. Greg Peterson joins us now to talk some baseball with us. You can follow Greg on Twitter at GUnit_81. His tribute to Anquan Boldin, one of his favorite players back in the day. Were you just obsessed with Anquan Boldin? Was that the thing, Greg?
Absolutely. When he played that 2008 season with a broken face and was a Pro Bowl starter, that had me hooked right there. And by the way, a great week for Canva this week because we all saw that on full display Saturday night to put up the extra 1 second.
But wait, I missed what you said at the beginning. What did you say at the start?
A great week for Canva.
For Canva.
Wait,
are you understanding?
No.
Great. Kelly doesn't understand
either. I don't get the reference either, Greg.
Canva.
Because Canva always helps out with like all the editing and everything like that to be able to make it look like, oh, it was 1 second.
Oh, Canva.
Okay.
Okay. All right. You know, that Anquan Boldin thing, he did have a broken face. His entire face looked different from that point on thereafter in his life. He did not look like himself anymore because of the subsequent surgeries. All right, Greg, baseball, final 3 weeks, baby. This is it. So many wild card. We'll take a look at the standings here coming up on the show, but so many spots. It's actually not as many as it used to be. It's kind of clearing up in terms of the third wild card, not cleared up completely, but at least the teams that are contending are being reduced here with 3 weeks left. You have one total in four sides. Let's start with the total today between the Braves and the Phillies.
Yep, early game here, and I like the over between Braves and Phillies. This is going to be Grant Holmes going for the Braves, and man, he's been doing for regression for a very long time. A solid 3.62 ERA, but less than 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, over 3.5 walks per 9, and Aceless Lizardo has just really strange home and road splits. Away from home, a sub-180 ERA, really doesn't give up the deep ball, more like 1.2 home runs per 9 innings, and a 4.52 ERA at home. Braves are starting to find their swagger a little bit more on offense, too. Nice comeback yesterday. You got a Phillies team that averaged nearly 5 runs per game at home. I think that this is a really good spot for some runs. And for the Braves, they've been a little bit banged up with that bullpen as well. So I do like the total of 8 here. If I actually had to play the side, I'd be looking at the Phillies on the run line. But that's a pretty chalky side there with the Phillies with regards to money line. So I suck with the run line.
All right, Mets at Marlins. Mets dunzo. Marlins, boy, they still have a math. We start to invoke the word mathematical here with 3 weeks left. Mathematically, still in it, but man, they're drifting. It's not looking good. How are you playing the Mets at the Marlins today?
Yeah, that stretch where they were like the most winless team coming out of the All-Star break in July absolutely destroyed them, but I think they're going to be destroying Jonah Tong in this one. He made five starts last year and had a 7.71 ERA. He's looked okay in his three relief appearances coming out of the bullpen, but man, not really a guy that I have a lot of faith in. Even at the minor league level, he was giving up five walks per nine innings. And Eury Pérez, throughout his career, more than a point and a half better on his ERA at home rather than away from him. That's been very much a case this season. At home, a 2.82 ERA. It's a Marlins team that has been a little bit cheeky with the bullpen, but keep in mind, the Mets, they traded away pretty much their entire bullpen at the deadline. So I think this is a great spot for the Marlins being about minus 115. So took the fish here on the money line.
Marlins now four back of the Diamondbacks, who inhabit the number three wildcard position. Diamondbacks have a half game lead over the Padres for that final National League playoff spot. Marlins, not only the only team down four games in that wild card race. Cardinals also down four. Pirates down five. Let's go to the American League. Are the Orioles next? Because we just went through the September standings and who was at the top. The Orioles are 0-6 in September. They have fallen four back in the American League wild card race. And it's not good because the Rangers are in between them and the Guardians. The Blue Jays are in between them and the Guardians. Well, the Orioles have a chance to get in, get back in it. They have a three-game set against the Guardians that begins tonight at Orioles Park at Camden Yards. How are you playing this?
Yeah, and it doesn't help when you have to go up against the Red Sox like they did in the previous series. But I think this is a nice get back spot for them because Trevor Rogers, he has been in the neighborhood of going 10-6 in the team in the last 16 starts for the team. Additionally, since the beginning of the month of June, a 3.01 ERA. The ERA does not point out how well he's pitched. And Joey Cantillo on the flip side, massive walks issues here for the Guardians. He's been giving up 4.6 walks per nine innings. Guardians have looked better with their offense here recently. Trading for the likes of Joe Adell and company helps them out. But I think that this is a good right spot for the Orioles. You mentioned the fact that they went 0-4 in September. They've been close in a lot of these games. I think they bust through here. I took them on the money line.
Guardians one game lead in the wild card race for that final wild card spot in the American League, but also Guardians 2.5 out of the White Sox, behind the White Sox, in the AL Central race. As the Guardians pit along at 73-71, they're going to break our hearts again with our under 79.5. What else you got today, Greg?
I also do like the Giants here on the money line. I set them at a minus 130, or I took them at a minus 130 with Logan Webb, who's always so much better at home rather than away from home. Michael McGreevy comes in really bad form, 3+ runs allowed, and now 6 out of his last 8 starts. Giants are a little bit banged up, so I don't know if I would want the over, but getting them at minus 130, took them on the money line, and then that last game was Brewers versus Cubs. Give me the Brewers to gasser it up with Robert Gasser. He's been so much better in terms of not giving up the deep ball at home rather than away from home. And Matthew Boyd has actually been really good away from home, a sub-3 ERA. But that Brewers bullpen since July 1st, number one in the National League. So I took the Brewers here right around minus 120, minus 125 on the money line.
Yeah, Brewers right now, well, 88-56. Let's call it 1.5 game lead over the Dodgers for the best record in all of baseball. 3 weeks left in the season. Fab Five from Greg Peterson. Greg, thank you as always. Appreciate it.
Always fun. Thank you.
Greg Peterson, everybody. Follow all his stuff at vsin.com. We'll get dating updates from him in subsequent weeks. Coming back with more baseball. It's a numbers game at VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The wait is finally over. College football's back, and the NFL season kicks off this week. 2 days away. Now it's time to get your edge with VSiN Pro. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get instant access to our updated NFL betting guide with post-preseason updates, week one betting systems, contest strategies, and fresh best bets from VSiN's experts. You also receive our college football betting guide with previews of all 138 FBS teams. Sign up now. You also get daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Get started for just $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, the best listeners in the game. We get tweets. Steve the Proxy. Here's a hot take. Oh, listen to this one, Kelly. You'll like this. If Aaron Judge comes back after 80 or 81 games, did MLB hide a steroid pop? I don't think they checked for peptides yet, but it sure would be interesting if the biggest star in the game misses exactly 80 games. I guess we'll find out this week.
You don't have to. It doesn't take a lot to sell me on these types
of
things.
You like that one.
I think it's in a lot of people's best interest to bury those types of stories. And like, I mean, I'm not the biggest conspiracy theory guy, but like, yeah, a little bit. Judge was dealing with like injury stuff too, right? So it's kind of easy for everybody to just agree with sometimes on those, right? Like, okay, sit out.
Rackman,
back later.
Rackman Jones, are you on anything in the Andreeva Potapova or Świątek Zhang matches this morning? Missed first 30 minutes of the show today. No, I am not. Both favorites properly priced, in my opinion. Listener Lance didn't play him on spread either. Listener Lance. Oh, football props. I had Lacey over rushing and over receiving last night. He was flying over both before the outburst of scoring started, but he got hurt after one run in the third quarter and all the props lost. If he gets hurt in the first half, I get my money back. Oh, is that right? That you get your money back? That is ironic because that turned out to be a offensive fireworks display last night between Ole Miss and Louisville. Do you see this game?
Oh yeah, but it was on Louisville. That was nice. Both those games were crazy second halves, right? Like, man, I don't know about you, but I was all jacked about college football coming out of Saturday, right? And those games start yesterday, and you're like, ugh. First of all, I don't know what I'm more sick of. I'm more sick of like, I can't tell if I'm more sick, Gil, of us doing these at the same time like they did that, or of people complaining about it because it just keeps happening. Like these one-off college football or whatever, it doesn't really matter the sport, but we think we can schedule these games at the same time. Like, no, people want to watch them both. And you're like, you're forcing them to choose. But then everybody complains afterward.
Lucas Carnero, I'm getting ahead of myself to the Triple Crown thing, kicked a 48-yard field goal to win it for Ole Miss last night. A kick that would have been good from about 55.
Yeah.
Right down the pipe. But can we just give a shout? I know Trinidad Chambliss played great, but dude, I just want to give a shout out to Lincoln Kienholz for Louisville. Lincoln Kienholz, it was just no matter who was the quarterback at Ohio State, he was never going to start. Whether it was Kyle McCord, whether it was Will Howard, whether it was Julian Sayin, he was always in the background.
And he kind of looked like a bum in the first half.
He kind of looked like a bum in the first half, and then he went crazy in the second. So good on him.
I Trinidad Chambliss, though, like, it's, what's he listed at? 6'1", 6'2". I don't even know if he's actually that tall.
Yeah.
That kid's, I know he's going to be, what, 25 by the time we play next year? He's getting a shot. He's getting a shot in the NFL, man. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to be the first overall pick or go crazy about that just yet. It's a long football season to go. And oh boy, did that Arch Manning fella look pretty damn good on Saturday.
He looked great at the end of last year too.
He did. But yeah. Chambliss, man, that kid, he's getting a shot. He's good.
He's great last year too. Chris Felica, the Bear, live texting the show.
Oh, what, does he know something about college football or something?
No, it has nothing to do with the college football part. He's actually commenting on the Aaron Judge tweet. And he says, same thing with Sinner. We haven't seen him since Wimbledon.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he thinks.
Well, this is where I could be talked into this because of our country club in sports. This is how they tend to handle things sometimes, right?
And it's totally star system.
Yes, very much.
Gordon Dye, what happened at the end of the Michigan-Western Michigan game made that hot dog eating contest clock look legit this 4th of July. You know what, Gordon? I'm actually angry that my deep investigative report,
where I spent
10 minutes of my life on an isolated camera watching exactly how many hot dogs... What was the girl? Miki Sudo, what was her name?
Yeah, Miki Sudo.
How many she ate?
Yep.
It was 34. It was not 38 and a half. That was the biggest fix ever. Thank you, Gordon, for bringing it up again.
We got a lot of texts about that with it. This is the most interesting part of that story to me, was we got a whole lot of texts from inside the gambling community.
Yes,
from
we
that.
Did. They were thrilled about
and
it.
There wasn't as much just public reaction, which I felt was a little odd.
Pablo? Once you're done with Kawhi and Magic and all those big kahunas.
Stacking plates.
Hot dogs, baby. Torch D, the one who put the satin in your panties. The best part of the weekend was when an already pissed off Todd Wishnev gave out under 46 and a half in the Notre Dame game, and Wisconsin scored 0.7 seconds later. Walk it off, Todd. We love you. Los Vegas 514, yo, I want to wish you and Kelly, as well as the whole A&G crew, a happy Labor Day. Question for you and Kelly, what was your first ever job, the one that started your labor? Oh, I can tell you, I can, are we talking non-paid or paid?
Oh, I'm assuming paid.
Paid was telemarketing.
Really?
Yeah.
I went for a, in the 80s, Tallahassee, what, like an actual, I think it was one of like three real jobs I even real actually considered. It was a telemarketing service for one of the political parties. I sat there for half a day and I was like, I can't do this job. It was terrible. So God bless you. Yeah. I was a bag boy and stocker at Publix supermarket. Still own stock today. When it was one of the best jobs I ever had.
Yeah.
Kind of wish I could go back and do it right now.
Paid job. That's it. Yeah.
Best subs. That's right, Larry Mir. That is absolutely right. Buffalo chicken tender sub.
Giuseppe Berta. Go away, Guardians. Go away. I couldn't sit up there myself. Auburnist Kelly Bidlin, waiting on Kelly Bidlin's guessing college football line segment to return.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly's very silent.
We firing that up tomorrow?
Are we doing a water taste test today, by the way?
We are. Yeah, okay. Chris Foster's setting it all up.
We teased a water taste test. We got to have someone call me water sommelier the other day.
That was awesome.
Real quick here. This is some baseball standings because there are things you can bet on here. 3 weeks left in the season. Who will get the number one seed of the American League? Right now, the Rays have a 4-game lead over the Yankees and a 6.5 game lead over the Red Sox. The Rays are -450. Can they botch this? I don't think so. Oh, by the way, -500 to get the number one seed. Pardon me. That was the AL East we were just showing.
Yeah.
But same deal. Basically the same price. -500 on the Rays to get the number one seed. The Rays, you're wondering about strength of schedule down the stretch between the Rays, Yankees, and Red Sox. The Rays do have the 7th hardest remaining schedule by opponent aggregate win percentage. The Yankees and Red Sox. Red Sox are very middling, and so are the Yankees. They were like 16th and 18th. So, yes, that's the case you could make is that, based on remaining strength of schedule, I don't think it's a strong enough case, quite frankly.
Yeah, I guess this one is just, I mean, at this point, Gil, right? It's kind of just compare number one seed versus AL East odds.
Correct. I mean, the Rays do play. They play the Braves. They play the Yankees. They play the Phillies. They play the Red Sox. They play the Astros. I mean, they do have head-to-heads, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got 4 against the Yankees, 3 against the Red Sox. So, there's a case to be made. If you think the Yankees can get there at +360, Red Sox have a little further to go, 6.5 back.
I mean, you're getting 10 more cents of the number one seed market for whatever reason on the Yankees.
Hmm. I still think
includes
it's the
White Sox, I guess.
We'll talk Rays when we get to Manager of the Year coming up. National League odds to get the number one seed. This is much more of a logjam. Brewers, who are trying to get the best record in all of baseball, they're 88-56. As I mentioned moments ago, they're 1.5 game lead over the Dodgers. The Brewers are even money to get the number one seed in the NL. The Dodgers are +105. Isn't that amazing? After all said and done, they're the Dodgers chilling with a number two seed. Braves are only 2.5 behind the Brewers,
mm-hmm.
and then the Phillies and Cubs have a ways to go. Would you play the Braves? Is there a case for the Braves at +750?
Man, okay, so I like that we basically said the same thing about this market, right, for like 2 months, 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, well, the Dodgers aren't going to try that hard for the one seed. They just want to buy, right? They just want to make sure they get a buy. But now it's late enough now, Gil.
Yes.
And we've got three teams within 2.5 games of each other. Like, I don't know that the Dodgers can play it the way that we thought they could play it 2 months ago. Of like, no. We're one of two that were so far separated at the top.
You're correct.
We don't have to worry about it. No, you got to try now to make sure you secure one of these things. So
Braves have the 5th hardest remaining schedule in baseball. Braves have 19 games left. They have the 5th hardest remaining schedule. They got to play the Rays, the Cubs, the Phillies, among other teams.
That's got to be baked into that price, right?
Yes, for sure. Brewers, 11th hardest. Guess where the Dodgers are?
They're easy.
5th easiest.
I mean, like this, I think you can make a case for the Dodgers or the Braves. I'm a little interested to bet in the Dodgers, actually.
Yeah. After all is said and done,
yeah,
Dodgers once again. Doyers.
And for months where I think we were thinking about it the right way, but I'm like, you're like, why would you bet the Dodgers in this market? They just care about getting a buy. Okay, it's become bunched up now.
In case you're wondering, to win the World Series, Dodgers are +185. Everybody else is 8-1 or longer.
That's wild.
Yeah.
So
baseball.
Somewhere Dinzik's got like a 3-1 ticket on the Dodgers. He's just been carrying around with him for 4 months.
I told you how excited I am to do the manager of the year stuff later.
Very yes, excited. You have.
We'll come back. Wes Reynolds, among others. NFL next. Let's do it.